to drive describes the running of the test scalar ratio. And following, I will briefly explain what we can expect to run. The implication is different for single-field inflation model and multi-field model than I want to. Okay. First, why gravitational waves? So we know that during inflation, there exist two different types of, three different types of perturbations, scalar perturbations, vector perturbations, and tensor perturbations. So among these three, vector perturbation is decaying exponentially, so usually we don't regard it. So the scalar perturbation is something which appears as the prime source of the anisotropy in the universe, the temperature fluctuation of the CMB or the large scale structure of the universe or whatever. And the tensor fluctuation, which appears as the gravitational waves, is another source of prime interest nowadays. So you must have heard of many ongoing or planned experiments like BICEP or SPIDER, and not to mention Planck, which are all expected to, if we are lucky enough, detect the signal of primordial gravitational waves in some 10 years or something like that. So gravitational waves are believed to contribute the CMB spectrum up to low multiples around roughly 100 or something like that, and will be detected if we can detect the B-mode polarization. So let me ask you two questions. Why are gravitational waves increasingly important nowadays? And what we can run, how we can make use of our capabilities? So to me, the first answer should be that first, if we detect R, the tensor to scalar ratio, then we can expect that we can directly determine the energy scale of the inflation. So it is very profound implication for our model building. So whether, for example, inflation is at God scale or intermediate scale or even say something like TV scale or something like that. So it's very important. And another very important point is that it can be a very crucial test for many different models. So until now, we have the observed amplitude of power spectrum and the running of the power spectrum or spectral index. So we have hundreds of models which can reproduce the correct values of those two observables. Of course, we can hope to detect beyond that, for example, the running of the spectral index or something like that, but probably they are very small, too small to be detected. So the tensor to scalar ratio is, I think, along with non-Gaussianity, is one of the prime observable for our future observation. So for example, until now, the most recent WMAP result says that with 95% confidence level, it's just less than 0.2, and there is no other limit. So if we, for example, detect R equals to 0.01 or something like that, then probably we may neglect most of the strange inflation models based on KKL to like 7. So it's a very crucial test for many models. So how we can make use of R? So here I would like to suggest another point that we can obtain a new consistent relation from the running of the scalar to tensor ratio, tensor to scalar ratio, and we can run something very important from that. Okay, so let me first write the running of the tensor to scalar ratio. It's extremely simple. So this table is something you know very well. So for tensors fluctuation, the power spectrum is given like this, and spectral index is something like this. For scalar case, single and multi cases, they are written, the power spectrum is a little bit different, but anyway, the spectral index is the same. It can be written in the same way. So here, for the multi-scalar power spectrum, H is the metric of the field space, and N is the number of epochs, and the comma denotes the derivative with respect to the corresponding field component. So from the spectral, the dependence on the K, so we can easily find that the tensor to scalar ratio is dependent on the wave number in this combination. So it's very simple. The consistent relation we can write from the running of the tensor to scalar ratio is simply this one, some combination of scalar spectral index and tensor spectral index. So what I would like to emphasize at this point is that this is first order quantity in slow roll approximation of the same order as scalar spectral index. So in principle, it is observable. So we can hope it will be detected in near future once we detect tensor to scalar ratio. So in fact, the real feasibility, whether we can we will be really able to detect the running of the tensor to scalar ratio, not only just the tensor to scalar ratio, is in fact a profound question whether this relation will be really useful or not. And it is in fact under investigation right now. So probably I hope I can report it within a couple of months. But anyway, just let me continue what we can run if it is detected, what we can run from it. So for the first, let me talk about the single field case. So from the single field inflation model under the slow roll approximation, we know this relation here, epsilon and eta are the usual slow roll parameters defined like this. So putting back, and for tensor spectral index, independent of the detailed field dynamics, the NT, the spectral index of tensor power spectrum, is -2 epsilon. It's common because it is just independent of the detailed field dynamics. So combining NT and this one, then you can see that we can read it just this one. So one immediate implication we can find out is that we can classify whether the inflation model belongs to hybrid type or not. If it turns out to be negative, then it belongs to hybrid type. Or positive, it's non-hybrid type. So you must have seen this famous plot in RNS plane, where the line eta equals to 2 epsilon divides whether the model belongs to hybrid type or not. And the line eta equals to 0 divides among the non-hybrid type whether it belongs to large field type or small field type. So it's in fact very old classification scheme, and well, it might be not very useful to directly use it. But anyway, it can be a very good estimator which inflation model we should take care of. But one problem is that we can obtain exactly the same information by combining the other variables. I mean, the power spectrum was scalar perturbation, and the power spectrum tensor perturbation, and also, or equivalently, the tensor to scalar ratio and the spectral index. So it can be a good consistent check, but regretfully for single field case, there is no information. There's nothing. Well, so this is a little bit disappointing, but for multi-field case, the situation is different. So before that, let me present the spectral index in multi-field case. Well, it's quite complex, and you don't have to read it everything, but two things I would like to mention is that the first term, the first one, eta multi, which is defined in the lowest one, is basically it's multi-field version of the eta parameter for single field case. It's basically double derivative, but you can see it is multiplied by some different factor. So this will play a crucial role later, and IJKL is the Riemann curvature tensor in the field space. Okay, so these two things will be important. But anyway, so for right now, just concentrating on NS itself, then you can see here exists minus 2 epsilon minus R divided by 4. Here, minus 2 epsilon is, I said before, this is just the tensor spectral index. And R divided by 4 is something we can observe. So let me just arrange this formula a little bit. Then we can see that the running of R minus R divided by 4 is given by this one. So let me say three things about this expression. So first one thing is that we cannot obtain this formula by combining the power spectra and the spectra index as we did for single field case. We cannot obtain the same expression. And second thing is that on the left-hand side, the running of R and R, they are in principle observable. But on the right-hand side, the quantities are completely model dependent. So by purely observable quantities, we can extract some information on the underlying model. And the final thing is that we can expect to have some contribution from curved field space or non-trivial dynamics. So let me just briefly mention these two in turn. So first, let me mention about the curved field space case. That is when the contribution comes from the green term. So curved field space simply when the Riemann curvature tensor is non-zero. So in this case, for example, one prime example is that this kind of color potential, which appears very frequently in supergravity or string theory. And this modulus, let us write the modulus T as two summation of two real fields X and Y. Then in this case, after some calculation, you can easily find that there are non-zero components of Riemann curvature tensor. So it's roughly speaking 1 over x squared, and this is not zero. So in this case, we can expect that we'll get some contribution from non-zero field space. But the problem is that typically for this kind of model, for example, some KK-based model or racetrack inflation model, something like that, the field is estimated to be rather than 10 or something like that, or 100. So in this case, the contribution will be highly suppressed, say something like 1 part of 100 or 1 part of 1,000 or something like that. So it's a little bit depressing whether we can really observe the field space, the geometry of the field space. But even if the field space is flat, we can still obtain some contribution because of non-trivial dynamics in the field space. And it is quite natural because the field space can be highly curved or it can have some complex geometry. So the trajectory is not expected in general follow some straight line. So as a very simple example, consider this kind of hybrid-like situation, that is, the field is following in some way, and at some critical value, inflation ends. So just estimating the number of EFOs, then we have some universal ending at some point. So think of field fluctuation, which is parallel to the velocity of the field. So if the fluctuation is some way up, then for that part of the universe, we'll have a little more number of EFOs. And the opposite way, if the field fluctuation is towards the critical value, then for that part, we'll have less number of EFOs. So I mean, for the field fluctuations parallel to the velocity of the field, we have some fluctuation in the number of EFOs, and it will in turn become some perturbation. But how about the orthogonal component, orthogonal to the field velocity? Well, as you can clearly read from this figure, it does nothing. How far you can move some point perpendicular to the velocity, how far you move it, it does nothing to the perturbation in the number of e-force. But now we consider some different case that the critical field value is not perpendicular to the field velocity, but is somewhat different, for example, because of other fields, for example, psi. Then how about this one? Then clearly, the perpendicular field fluctuation affects the number of e-force. For some part of the universe, if we have some amount of fluctuation, then it may reduce or increase the number of e-force for that part of the universe. So it can give rise to some perturbation. So what it means is that if you remember E term of T, then Vij, the double derivative of the potential, is contracted with the gradient of number of e-force. So it is some kind of projection operator, right? So if you remember the definition of number of e-force, what this definition requires is that the the product of gradient of n and the velocity of the field is equal to something. It does not require that each component has some specific relation with the corresponding partner. So it means by some non-trivial field dynamics, we can have something interesting during the wave. So it can give rise to some non-trivial contribution to the running of the tensor to scalar ratio. So now let me conclude. So first, we have found a new consistent relation from the running of R. So this is extremely simple. This is just some combination of scalar spectral index and tensor spectral index. And what it means, what we can run from this running of tensor to scalar ratio. For single field models, we can find that whether it's positive or negative, we can classify it, roughly speaking, the model belongs to a hybrid type or non-hybrid type. But the problem is that for this case, we can extract exactly the same information by combining other observables. So it can be a good consistency check, but there is no new information. But for multi-field model, we can have completely new information, which we are unable to access unless we make use of this relation. So it can give us some information on the field space or the inflationary dynamics. So it can be it might be a good future observable we should aim for. So let me finish it here. Thank you.
One second. We've heard a lot this week about how hard it's going to be to measure B-mode's polarization of B-mode from the CMV. And to find the running of the tensor scalar ratio, you're really going to have to take a measurement of NT at at least two different scales, if not more, to get. Do you have an idea of how hard it's going to be?
You mean in terms of
Which satellite would be able to do it? I presume Planck isn't, they're trying to measure just detection, not...
That's right. So probably I think rather than the satellite satellite experiment, but probably even ground detection program might be useful, like BICEP or something. So in fact, I was kind of surprised that BICEP can detect such a high resolution, even on the ground. So I just naively expect Planck will be just to detect whether there is some tensor scalar ratio or not. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's already a very great improvement.
Yes.
But probably the running might be difficult, and we might have to wait for a while more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a something that you question. What's the definition of hybrid modem?
A hybrid modem. Also, hybrid inflation model is just some scheme that the end of inflation is induced by some different field. That field is usually called waterfall field.
Yeah.
So if the influx field is running some way and at some critical point, that waterfall field, which is presumed to be well inside its minimum, becomes unstable because its effective mass is related to the influx field. So at some critical field, the shape of the potential along the waterfall field becomes something flatter, and it's inverse, so it rolls down to some minimum. So that's how inflation ends. So because it is some combination of chaotic inflation and some different way of finishing inflation, so it is called a hybrid.
Yeah. So what's the current situation about non-Gaussian energy, the estimation of
non-Gaussian
energy
for
the multiple?
For multiple. Well, it depends on that. So there is no unique prediction about that. So you have to calculate more by more. So it can be very large, it can be very small. We don't know.
I think we should thank the speaker again.